Today's shiur in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Gittin Daf Mem Ches. Mi'etz Hashem, we're finishing off the fourth parak. We'll start Mi'etz Hashem, the fifth parak as well, and we begin on the very last line of Mem Zayin Omud Beis. In yesterday's shiur, we had a famous machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan holds Kinyan Peiros Kinyan Aguf Dami, that when a person acquires the rights to eat the fruits of a field, it's as if he's acquired the field as well, and therefore in Bikurim he would be maybe Vikore, he's considered the owner of the field, even though he only has the rights to the fruits, whereas Reish Lakish holds that in fact Kinyan Peiros Lav Kinyan Aguf Dami, that in fact is not considered a valid Kinyan in the field. Yes, you have the fruits, but you don't have the Kinyan in the field, and therefore in regards to Bikurim, he would be maybe the Enu Kore. That's what we learned in yesterday's shiur. Now we're going to understand this a little bit better. We begin on the very last line again of Mzainu Beis Va'azdu L'Tamayu. Each of them follows their own shita in the following scenario. The Itmar Hamocher Sodeyu. If a person sells his field, and we turn to Mem Chesamad Aleph Bisman Shai Yovel Noheg. During the years that the Novel was Noheg, as Rashi points out, Kol Mechiras Karak LePeros Shari Choser Aguf BiYovel. Now, when the Yovel was Noheg, every man should be Noheg again. So, by definition, nobody ever really sold the ground. They didn't sell the karka. They only sold the rights to the fields, Peros, for the years until the Yovel. So, let's say it was in the first year after the last Yovel. So, there'd be 49 years till the next Yovel. So, then you would sell the field for 49/49 of its price based upon the fruits. If you sold it 2 years in, you'd sell it for 48/49, etc., etc. If you sold it towards the end, so you'd pay a much lower rate for the field because you're not really owning the field. You're just having the rights to the fruits for, let's say, 3 years, 4 years, towards the ends of the Yovel. So therefore, Bisman Shai Yovel Noheg, you're really not acquiring Kinyan Haguf. You're only acquiring Kinyan Peros. And nevertheless, Bisman Shayovel Nogi, if a person buys a field, Rabbi Yochan, Omar, maybe Rikori, no problem. And actually, when you bring your Bikurim on this field, you bring it and you say the Psukkah because you're considered Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Aguf Dami. Whereas Reish Lakish, Omar, no. In that situation, during the time of the Yovel, if a person didn't own the field, so he had purchased the field up until the Yovel, and then it would return to the ancestral owners, to what's called the Steyachuza, so then maybe the Enokar, then he can bring the Bikurim, but he doesn't say the Psukkah. Now, let's understand this. Rabbi Yochanan may be Vikare because Kinyan Peros Kinyan Aguf Dami. Reish Lakish may be Vinokare because Kinyan Peros Lav Kinyan Aguf Dami, as I just said. So therefore, this is the Machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Now, we have the case by Yovel, and we had yesterday, we had the case in a regular person selling a field just for the rights of the Peros. He didn't sell the field, he sold somebody. Yeah, you can have the rights to eat the fruits of the field for 5 years. So in that situation, Rabbi Yochanan also said maybe the Kore, and Reish Lakish said no. Kinyan Peros Lav Kinyan Aguf Dami, and therefore maybe the Enu Kore. So why do we have to have the Machlokes by the case from yesterday, which I just mentioned now, and the case that we're learning today, Bisman Shayovel Noeg? Don't they both teach us the same thing? Isn't it redundant to say that there's a machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish in both of these cases? Gemara says, no, you need both cases. Tzricha. You need the case of today, the Yovel. You need the regular case of the sale of just the fruits of the field. Because, Tzricha, if we only said it in yesterday's case, I would have said there, where the person is selling the rights to only eat the fruits of the field, he's certainly not selling the field. Only in that situation, Bahai Kama Reish Lakish, the Ki Konochis, Adaita the Peri Konochis. In that situation, only did Reish Lakish say, listen, the guy knew he wasn't acquiring karka, he was just acquiring the Peros. And that's why, and only in that case, did Reish Lakish say, Peros, Kinyan Peros, Lavki Kinyan Aguf Dami. Avol Bahach, during the Yovel, the person is intending to have this field for 25 years till the Yovel, whatever it is till the Yovel. The Adaite de Gufe Konochas, he's acquiring the land. Yes, it's a temporary acquisition of the land till the Yovel, but he's acquiring the land. Maybe in this situation, Eimah Modin L'Rav Yochanan, the Reish Lakish would agree with Rav Yochanan here that in this situation, even though it's technically only Kinyan Peros, but since it's Adaita de Gufa of the land, so therefore maybe Reish Lakish would say, maybe Vikari in this situation. Therefore, Kamash Malan, you have to give us that case to teach us that he's not moded to Rav Yochanan. Eimah Modin L'Rav Yochanan, and he's not. Oh, fine. The Eid, my Baha. If you only told me the case of the Yovel, you know what I would have said? Baha, only in this case of the Yovel, Kama Rav Yochanan, the Rav Yochanan say that Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Aguf Dami. Because here, he certainly was intending a Daita de Gufe. So maybe here, and only here, the Rav Yochanan say that it's Peros, Kinyan Peros is Kinyan Aguf Dami. But you know what? Taki would agree with Reish Lakish. In the case where the guy just sold the rights to eat the fruit, maybe Eimah Modin L'Rav Yochanan, he would actually be Modin Reish Lakish that in fact, Kinyan Peros Lav Kinyan Aguf Dami, therefore Tzricha, you need that case. So you need both cases to show us the full strength of the argument of the respective sides, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Now we're going to try to bring several prices that are in support of Rav Yochanan. Toshma, bringing from the following Mishnah, actually. This is a Mishnah in Bikurim. Actually, this would be Mishnais that we're going to bring rice from both the first two or from Bikurim. Hakone Ilan Vikarko. If a person purchases a tree and the karka that's associated with that tree. So here he's clearly purchasing the karka as well as the tree. Nevertheless, maybe Vikari. Now, this is during the time of the Yovel, we're assuming, and therefore this is a riot to Rav Yochanan, that even Bisman Shayovel Noheg, the Mishnah says, maybe Vikari. So, according to Reish Lakish, during the Zman of the Yovel, so maybe Veino Kari. So, here you clearly see Akona Ilan Vikarko, maybe Vikari, Kashan, Reish Lakish, and a riot to Rav Yochanan. So, it says, Lavdavka, Hokhmay Eskinam, Bisman Shayna Yovel Noheg. Who says this is during the time of the Yovel? Maybe it's talking about the time. Not during the Yovel. And during the time when it's not the Yovel, even Reish Lakish would agree. If you purchase the karka, so then it's not a question of Kinyan Peros, Lav Kinyan Guf, or is Kinyan Guf Dami? No, you purchase the karka, so that's Kinyan Guf. So therefore, that's not a raya. So Reish Lakish would say this Mishnah in Bikurim is talking about Bisman She'ein HaYovel Noeg. And then we'll bring another Mishnah from Bikurim. We will give the exact same question and the exact same teretz. Toshma, here in this other Mishnah in Bikurim, it says, HaKone Shnei Ilonos B'Soch Sodeu Shechaveiro. If a person purchases two trees without the karka necessarily in the field of his friend, so he has the rights to the fruit of those trees, but Lav Davka, does he have any karka? So then everybody agrees in this situation, maybe in a Kori, because he doesn't own the karka. He just owns the fruits in this situation. But Hashlosha, if he purchases three, which automatically is Rashi says the Kaimalot that we learn, the Kana Karka Tachtei, and when you purchase three, you also automatically have the ground underneath them. And Ubinem, and between the trees, Kimelo or Rivasalo, and a certain span, and that you can go and collect the fruits from these trees. So if you have three, and it's during the years of the Yovel, maybe Vikari. Oh, here's another clear raya to Rav Yochanan that when you purchase land during the years, Bisman Sheyovel Noeg, nevertheless, maybe Vikari. So therefore, Kasha on Reish Lakish, a raya to Rav Yochanan. And we get the same exact terrace we get a minute ago. Hochanami, Bisman Sheyena Yovel Noeg. This is only when the Yovel is not Noeg. So everybody agrees that if you purchase the ground, so then you're maybe Vikari, Reish Lakish as well. And therefore, you can't bring us any raya over here as to what the din would be during Bisman Sheyovel Noeg. Alternatively, we could reconcile this with the following statement, Bahashta, the other Rechitza, now that we know the Rechitza said in the following scenario, that the Machlokis is B'yovo Sheni, but B'yovo Rishon, Divriya, Kol Mevi V'Kore. What are we talking about over here? So Rechitza says that this Machlokis that we have between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish can easily be understood in the following way. The discrepancy between the Mishnayos can be understood in the following way. The Machlokis is only B'yovo Sheni. What do we mean by B'yovo Sheni? So Rashi explains, we'll say it outside, then we'll see it inside. Rashi explains that the first time that we entered Eretz Yisrael, so that was the first Yovel. So in the first Yovel, the dinim were taught to us that yes, the karka will have to be returned. When you sell something, it goes back to the steachuza, to the original owners. So not everybody was convinced that that would happen. And therefore, in the first Yovel, people really thought that they were acquiring the land maybe forever. And therefore, in that scenario, kinyan peros kick kinyan aguf dami because they really thought they were getting the land. And that's until the first Yovel. Once the first Yovel came, and hey, everybody returned the land to its ancestral owner. You return the land to the owner, the Steachuza. Woo, now in Yovel Sheni, and we see in Rashi, the Yovel Sheni, now people saw, Shemonu Yisrael, Kvar Hurgalu Lahachzir Karkos. So now people saw, hey, this is a temporary sale. This is going to be only until the next Yovel. We have proof. The first Yovel, everybody gave it back. So we see that this is really the din. So now, in this scenario, Bahi Kama Reish Lakish, maybe the Eino Kore. Now we see that this is really not a full ownership of the land. It's really just Kinyan Peros. So here, Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan have the Machlokis. So now let's see inside again. Rav Chisda said that the Machlokis is only between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish in Yovel Sheni. Because people then knew that it was going back. And then you could say, do we say Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Aguf Dami or not? Rav Yochanan says yes, Reish Lakish says no, because everybody knew it was a temporary sale. And nevertheless, Rav Yochanan says, the Kinyan Peros, this temporary sale, is Kinyan Aguf Dami, whereas Reish Lakish says no. Avol B'Yovel Rishon, during the first Yovel period of counting, Divri Yakol Mevi V'Kor, because people didn't know that they were really going to give it back. So everybody agreed in that situation, even Reish Lakish, that in that time, Kinyan Peros is Kinyan Aguf Dami, because they really thought they were maybe getting the Kinyan Aguf. Dakati Lo Samach Datayu. They hadn't yet fully, so to say, convinced themselves that this was only a temporary sale. Now, and Yovel Sheni and onwards, they were convinced it was a temporary sale. Now the Machlokas occurs. And therefore, once we understand this opinion of Rav Chisda, then we can understand Lo Kasha. There's no problem with these two Mishnayos. Both of them could be talking about Ha B'Yovel Rishon, when even Reish Lakish would admit that maybe V'Koreh, whereas the opinion of Reish Lakish differs once it's no longer Yovel Rishon, Ha B'Yovel Sheni, and onwards, so then Reish Lakish would say, Kinyan Peros, Lav, Kikinyan Aguf Dami. So this is another way to reconcile the Mishnayos and Reish Lakish and the whole understanding of the Machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Now let us say that these great Amoraim, Reuchel and Reish Lakish, are in fact the Machlokes Tanoim, Lemek Tanoim, like the following Brisa. In the Brisa it says, "Binayin lokeach sodem aviv." Now we have to know a couple of dinim first. If a person owns land, so that is called his ancestral field that he got from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, and it's been inherited down to him, so that's called the Stei Achuza. And the dinim of a Stei Achuza are that when you sell a Stei Achuza, it goes back to the person at the time of the Yovel. Whoever you sell it to, it goes back to that original owner at the time of the Yovel. Now, what happens if the owner of the Stei Achuza is not selling the field, but he's makdish the field? He gives it over to the hekdish. So now he has up until the Yovel to go and redeem that field. If he doesn't redeem that field by the time of the Yovel, guess what? He never gets it back again. It belongs to the Beis HaMikdash Kohanim. And therefore, the Gizbor will divide up that land amongst the Kohanim, and they will now be the Stei Achuza, the owners of that field. And once it's theirs, now in the next Yovel, if they sell it to somebody and that person buys it until the next Yovel, it will come back not to the original owner, but it will come back to the Kohen owner, because once you give it over to Hekdish and you don't redeem it, then it stays in the property of Hekdish, and the Hekdish gives it to the Kohanim, and now the Kohanim are considered the Stei Achuza. That's din number one that we have to know. Din number two is, when a person sells his ancestral field to somebody else, that's called the Stei Mikneh. The person who buys it purchased it, and it goes back to the original owner at the time of the Yovel. What happens if the person who purchases it till the Yovel is Makdish it? So he gives it over to the Hekdish, and the original owner didn't redeem it, and the second owner didn't redeem it. So what happens at the Yovel? See here, it doesn't go to the Kohanim, it doesn't go to the Gizbar, it goes back to the original owner. Because the second owner, the one who purchased the field from the original owner, didn't have the right to be Makdish forever. He only had the right to be Makdish until the Yovel. And then, it's as if it was a Stei Miknit to him, it's still as if he owns it, it goes back to the original owner. Now, what happens if there's a father and son involved over here? So the father is considered the owner of the field, the son will inherit it eventually, and that's what this Bryce is now going to talk about. So let us say that this machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, is actually totally in this machlokas, in this Bryce between the Tanoim, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, versus Rabbi Meir. The case is, minayin lokeach sode me'aviv. If a son purchased one of his father's Stei Achuza fields, the father's still alive at this point in time, the son purchased it. So the son is considered like everybody else who purchases it. It's a Stei Miknah to the son. And at the Yovel, if the father's still alive, it will go back to the father. So this situation, the son, minayin lokeach sode me'aviv, v'hekdisha. Now the son was makdish it to the Beis HaMikdash. He's considered a Stei Miknah. If the father's still alive, everybody agrees in this situation that at the Yovel, it will go back to the father. But what happens now? After the son was makdish the field, v'achar kach meis aviv. Now, the father passed away in this scenario. If the father passes away, who inherits it? The son inherits it. Now, the son goes possibly from being the owner of a Stei Miknah to now being the owner over here of a Stei Achuza. So, he was makdish it while it was a Stei Miknah. Do we still consider it a Stei Miknah, and therefore will come back to his father, who's now dead, and therefore will come back to the son at the Yovel? Or do we say, no, it's like you're a Stei Achuza, and therefore if you're Makdish it, even though you're Makdish it, well, it was only a Stei Miknah, but now since you're the owner, because your father passed away, so now it's like a Stei Achuza, and if you don't redeem it from the Hekdish, then it will stay in the Hekdish forever, and it will be given to the Kohanim. So that's the Machlokas over here. But the scenario again is, the father, Yaakov, sells it to his son, Reuven. Reuven purchases it and makdish it at that point in time before the father's death. Then Yaakov dies. And now it's the Yovel. What happens? So, minayin shetei lufonav kistei achuza. So, the Tanakam over here, which will be Rehud and Reb Shimon, they say that this field is considered like a stei achuza. And therefore, if he doesn't go and redeem it, if this son doesn't redeem it from the Hekdish, it will go into the Hekdish forever. And it will go to the Kohanim. So Talmud Lomer, how do we know that? Im estei miknah so, asher lo mistei achuza so. If you have a stei miknah, which is not a stei achuza. So that comes to teach me extra words. Sada sheino ru'uya lio stei achuza. This then applies that if the purchaser is makdish it, it will go back to the original owner, is only if it's a field that is not potentially capable of being a stei achuza, a regular stei miknah. The extra words, asher lo mistei achuza so, come to teach us that if it in fact is a field that could have been a steachuza, so yatzis azu shiruuya liyo steachuza. Therefore, it doesn't go back to the person. He sold it while it was a stay mikdatim, but since it could have been a stay achuza, and now, in fact, it is a stay achuza, so even though he was maktish before it was a stay achuza, we view it as a stay achuza based upon the drush of this pasuk by Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and that's their opinion, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Fine, that's the first opinion of the Braisa. Rabbi Meir disagrees. Rabbi Meir says, Minayin lokeach sodemiyav, if the son purchases the field from his father, the Reuven purchases the field from his father, and before he's machdishit, umei sobiv. So now, the field is not only a stay mikdatim, now the field is his stay achuzah. He inherited from his father. Let's leave out there no other sons, no other problems over here. So he, now Reuven, is the sole owner of this field. Not only did he purchase the payros, the right to use it until the yovel, and if the father been alive, we'll go back to the father, but now the father died, so it's his field. The achakachitisha. Now, after the father's death, he's machdishit. In this and only this scenario, does Rav Meir say, the fun of kistei achuzah, that we view it as a stei achuzah for him, and therefore, it will, if he doesn't redeem it, it will stay with the kohanim. Talmud lomar, im estei mikdaso, ashalom istei achuzah. So, this pasuk. So, Rav Meir darshes it only in the scenario where he was machdishit after the father's death. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon say, even if he's machdishit before the father's death, we can view it as a stei achuzah. This is the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Meir. So he dashes out over here from the extra words in the pasuk, asher lo mistei achuzah so, saw the shenis stei achuzah. It has to be a field that's a stei mikdah, that's not a stei achuzah. In fact, excluding Yotzezu, in this situation, she's stei achuzah, which is actually a stei achuzah for him. Now, Rabbi Shimon, if Meis Aviv and the Achakachitisha, if the father had died first and then the son had been Makdishit, Lo Tzrichakor, they say, who needs a pasuk? This is 100% a stay achuza. Why would he need a pasuk to tell me that if he doesn't redeem it, that it stays with the Gizbar and it's distributed to the Kohanim at the Yovel? So, let us say now that this machlokis will be between Yehuda and Shimon versus Rabbi Meir is my lab b'hokabivli. They're arguing exactly about this din of Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Guf, Dami Yanat. The Rabbi Meir holds a Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Guf, Dami. Rabbi Meir holds that when the child purchased it, Reuven purchased the field from his father while his father's still alive, so then he not only got the Kinyan Peros, but he also got the Kinyan Haguf. And therefore, Ubeha, B'misas Aviv, Hudlo Yoris Vlomidi. He got nothing additional, so to say, when the father died, up until the Yovel, because he owned the Kinyan Peros, and that's like the Kinyan Aguf. So when now the father died, he's not getting additional Kinyan Aguf. He already owns that until the Yovel. And therefore, the Hilkach, Remei would say, Meis Aviv, the Achakach Hikdisha. One would have said that if the father dies, and then he was Makdashit, maybe you would say that he, in fact, should be considered like a stay mikneh, and it should go back to him at the Yovel. He doesn't have to redeem it. Oh, that's why tzarech kra. You need a pasuk to teach us that that's not the case. But the pasuk only teaches us in the case where he was makdishit after the father's death. But if he was makdishit before the father's death, then Rebbe would say, no, it doesn't go to the Kohanim, it comes back to him. Whereas the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, they hold Sabre, Kinyan Peros, like Kinyan Guf Dami. They hold like Reish Lakish, that Kinyan Peros is not considered Kinyan in the Guf, and therefore, Ubeha, B'misas Ovid, when the father passes away, Hashna Huda Koyoris. So he inherits something at that point, because until then he didn't own anything. So certainly, the Hilkoch, Meis Ovid, if the father died, the Achachachitisha, Lo Tzrichakra. Why would we need a pasuk? Because now he's the owner. He now becomes the Kinyan Guf, and therefore you don't need a pasuk to tell me that. Why do you need the extra pasuk, the extra words that it tells us from stei achuzaso? So therefore, v'chiyitzurik kra is lehikdisha when he was first makdishit, and only then did the father die. In that situation, who the yitzurik? That's why you need the pasuk. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, they say in both cases, but you need the pasuk only for the second case where he was makdishit before the father died, because if he was makdishit after the father died, no chiddush, you don't need a pasuk. Whereas Meir says, no, you do need a chiddush because Kinyan Peros kicking in a guf dummy, like Rabbi Yochanan. And therefore, Rabbi Meir would say that without a pasuk, you would say that he didn't gain anything by the father's death, and therefore, he's still considered to stay mikneh. Oh, kamash v'lam, we need the pasuk. So that's how we want to suggest this is Lemo Kitanoi. Rabbi Meir holds like Rabbi Yochanan, and you, the Rabbi Shimon, hold like Reish Lakish. No. In fact, that Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Aguf Dami, and they in fact also hold like Rabbi Yochanan. Everybody here holds like Rabbi Yochanan. So what's the machlokis then? What are Rabbi Meir arguing worse is Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Bahacha. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Kra Ashikhu Vidarish. They had the extra words over here, but they had double extra words. What do I mean by that? Because the pasuk should have said, Lichtov Rachbana im este miknoso, Asher lo achuzaso, leaving out the word miste achuzaso. So the extra words, Asher lo achuzaso, is one drasha. When it says Asher lo miste achuzaso, it's two drushas, and therefore they can learn out both. And in both scenarios, you have a pasuk to tell me that in fact the son over here is considered like the owner, and if he doesn't redeem the field by the oval from the gizbar, then it will belong to the kohanim. So the extra word, my miste achuzaso, teaches us sod desheina ruy lio ste achuza at all. And yotz zazu, shirui lio ste achuza, whether it was before the father died or after the father died. So therefore, they use these double words, asher lo miste and achuzaso, so to say, to teach us both dinim. Whereas Rav Meir only darshens one, and therefore Rav Meir says the opinion that it's only in the case where the father died first, and then the son was makdish, that you have the pasuk. But in the case where the son was makdish, and then the father died, Rav Meir would disagree. So we can't say that this is lemo kitanoi. I'm Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, by the way, Rav Yochanan Shita, the Kinyan Peros, Kikinyan Aguf Dami, that has to be correct. Ilav the Amar Rav Yochanan, Kinyan Peros, Kikinyan Aguf Dami, if that wasn't true, according to Rav Yochanan, Lamotzi Yod, the Ragla, the Beis Medrash, Rav Yochanan wouldn't be able to stand up in the Beis Medrash, so to say. He would not be able to stand on his feet because he wouldn't have a hands or feet to his name, so to say, because his Shita wouldn't make sense. He must hold Kinyan Peros, Kikinyan Aguf Dami because he had said, the Amar Vasi, in the name of Rav Yochanan, Amar Vasi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Ha'achish Chalku, two sons, Ruven and Shimon, that inherit their father's field, they're not considered like Reuven inherited this 100% and Shimon inherited that 100% after the fact. Elu l'kuchasei, they each inherited 50% and then when they each take their share, so Reuven, so to say, purchased the 50% that Shimon owned in his share and Shimon purchased the 50% that Reuven owned in his share and they're considered l'kuchos. And therefore, every Yovel, the Yerusha has to be redone again. U'marzirin zel zeh b'yovel. Now, if in fact you say that Rav Yochanan doesn't hold Kinyan Peros Kinyan Aguf Dami, so then this doesn't make any sense because Lo Mishkachas Demaisi Bikurim Elachad Barachad Ad Yoshua Bin Nun. Then it would never be possible for anybody to bring Bikurim, maybe the Kore, because the only time it would happen that you wouldn't have a Yerusha going back at the time of the Yovel would be if there was a son who had only one son, and this went on all the way back up to Yoshua Bin Nun. If, in fact, there were two sons, then it would always be Lekuchas, it would always be a Stei Mikna, so then nobody, according to Rav Yochanan, if he didn't hold Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Aguf Dami, then nobody would ever say, maybe the Kore. Oh, ergo, it must be that Rav Yochanan indeed does hold Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Aguf Dami. This is just a proof that Rav Yosef is telling us that this is, in fact, Rav Yochanan's Shita. Mark continues, it says, Amar Rava. Rava tells us, Kra, we have a Pasuk, Umasnisa, and we have a Braisa, Mesaili L'Rish Lakish, that are in support of Rish Lakish Shita, the Kinyan Peros, Lav Kikinyan Guf Dami. What's the Pasuk? Kra, we turn to Memches Omer Beis. The Pasuk is, Bimispar Shinei Tivuos, with the number of the years of crops, Tivuos, Yimkoloch. That's what is being sold to you. The implication here is that you're only buying the crops and you're not buying the ground. So this is a pasuk that is certainly in support of Reish Lakish's Shita. Amara does not tell us how Rabbi Yochanan would darshan it, but I think it's simple to understand. He says, yes, you acquire the peros, but with that you're also getting Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Aguf Dami. That would be mistaken the way Rabbi Yochanan would darshan it, but it's certainly the words are much more in accord with Reish Lakish Shita. Masnisa, where's the Braisa that's in support of Reish Lakish? The Tanya, it says in the Braisa, Bechor no tel pishnayim b'stei hachozeris li'ovid b'yovel. What's the case over here? The father sold the field to someone else, his steyachuza, the father sold it to a totally unrelated person, and then Nebuch, the father, dies. Now, in the laws of Yerusha, the Bechor only is entitled to the pishtayim, he's only entitled to the double portion on anything that's extant in the estate at the time of the death. So let's say the father has $100,000, so then the Bechor gets two portions. So let's say there are three children, so the Bechor will get two-thirds, and the other son will get one-third. Fine. In that situation, the Bechor gets a double portion because it's extant. The $100,000 are there, there's two children, so he gets two-thirds, and the other child gets one-third. What happens if there was a debt that was owed to the father? It hasn't been collected yet. So then, if this $100,000 debt has not been collected, it's only owed to the estate, then the Bechor only gets 50%, and the other child gets 50%. He doesn't get a double portion. That's called something that is going to come into the estate. It's not considered muchsach. It's only roi. It's going to come into the estate. We don't view that as muchsach is already in the estate. Now, in our case over here, that The Braisa says, Bechor no tel pishtayim, bistei achoseris lovi biyovel. So right now, the estate is in the hands of the person who purchased it. The field, the estate achuza, is in the hands of the person that purchased it, because it's not yet the yovel. Yet, the Bechor gets pishtayim of this land. Obviously, you see that we consider it already as it still is in the hands already, muchzok, in the estate of the father, because he only sold the peros, and therefore he didn't go and sell the rights to the land, because this is during the Zman of the Yovel, and therefore it is considered as if it's only a partial sale. The land doesn't go, it's only the rights to the fruits that go, and therefore this Braisa is certainly in support of Reish Lakish. By the way, how do we paskin in this situation? So the Gemara in Yevamos tells us that in general, when we have machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, the halacha always goes like Rav Yochanan, except for three scenarios. And this is one of those three scenarios where we pass like Reish Lakish, kinyan peros lav kinyan haguf domi. The Gemara concludes the parak with the following statement. Amar Abaye, Abaye says, Nikatinon, we have a masara that Baal benichse ishto tzarech harsha, that a husband who was, when the wife came into the marriage, she brought in nechse meluk, property, so the husband doesn't have any right to go and adjudicate on behalf of his wife's property unless the wife gives him permission. Normally, only the balim of the argument, the two litigants, have a right to be in court. Nobody else has a right to be there in court. Only the two parties. And technically, if it's involving the property itself, the actual meluk property, so then the husband has no rights. He's not considered an interested party in this situation. It's only the wife, unless the wife says, you be my shaliach, you go and act on my behalf, then he has the right to go there. Now, what do you see from this? That according to opinion of Reish Lakish, obviously the din is that the husband is only considered that nechse peros and not like the guf. Because if he was the guf, so then he would have the right. He wouldn't need his wife's harsha. Furthermore, Abaye says, "Velo amarim, we only said this din elo de lo noches aperi. That's only if the case was only involving the property and not involving the fruits. But if the case involved the fruits, so then avo noches aperi. If the case is involving the fruits, so then the husband is an interested party. He is one of the litigants. So then, in that situation." Since he has the right to go and litigate because of the payroll, so then he can also litigate even without a hersha on behalf of the guf, the property itself, because he is an interested party. And now we begin the next parak. The next parak, Tosus tells us, is included in Masechus Gittin, even though it doesn't really deal anything really with Gittin. And the top Tosus tells us, HaNizokin, said, Ein inyan nizokin, Eitzel Gittin. The next parak, which deals with damages, really doesn't belong in Masechtas Gittin. So why is it here? El Mishum, the Tanu Le'el, Ba'ashalech, because in the fourth parak, the parak that we just finished, we learned Mile de Tikkun Olam. The whole series of Mishnais that we've had, as I mentioned, is dealing with this was done because Tikkun Olam. This was done because of Tikkun Olam. So therefore, our parak here, Hanizokin, is also continuing Tanu Le'Hacha, because it also deals with Tikkun HaOlam. That's the connection between this fifth parak, HaNizokin, which has nothing to do with Gittin, and the previous parak, which was a whole series at the end of Mishnayos that are Mishum Tikkun HaOlam. And Tosfos then explains, that's why there's a parak, Get Pashut, that we find in Bava Basra, that's not listed in Gittin, which deals with Gittin. So how come that's over there and not over here? So he brings down that below Tanoa Hochav Mechilton, it's not in Masechus Gittin, it's found in Bava Basra of all places, Mishum Da'ayri Hosom B'mili Shtaros, because that was dealing with Shtaros, and a get is a type of a shtar. So therefore, it is included over there and not over here. Okay, now let us begin the fifth parak. The parak begins, HaNizokin, if somebody was damaged, and Reuven damaged Shimon, so Shimon's entitled to collect payment for the damages that Reuven did. So he's called the Nizak, and Reuven in this situation is the Mazik. So HaNizokin, a person who was damaged, so we go and make Reuven pay for the damages that he or his animal did to Shimon, Shomin Lahan, we evaluate them by Idis. We take the best properties and we use them to pay Shimon for the damages that were occurred. Now we'll see, what does it mean, the best properties? Does it mean the best properties of Reuven, or does it mean the best properties of Shimon? We'll see, this is Machlokas, Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Akiva when we get to the Gemara. But for now, in regards to Nizokin, let's focus on the point that the Nizak, the damaged person, is entitled to collect from the Idias properties. Idias are the best properties. Properties are divided up into Idias and Beinonis and Ziburis. Beinonis is the middle type of properties, and Ziburis is the worst type of properties. So there are three categories, and we'll have to see how we define them in terms of the Mazik and the Nizak. Now, that is the din for a Nizak, a person who's damaged. Ubalchov, let's say Balchov is normally somebody who lends somebody else money. So let's say Reuven borrowed money from Shimon. So Shimon here is the Balchov. So when Shimon comes to collect from Reuven, so he can collect from middle level properties. Ubalchov, the Beninus. And again, we'll have to explain whose middle properties we're talking about. So for now, the basic purpose is the Nizak is allowed to collect from the best properties. The Balchov is allowed to collect from middle properties. Now, most of the poskim say that if there's money available, so certainly money is the preferred way to go and pay back. There are some that say that property is also as good, but certainly if the person who did the damage, or his animal did the damage, or the person who owes the money, in our case, Reuven, who did the damage to Shimon, or Reuven, who borrowed the money from Shimon, so certainly he can pay back with money. But if he doesn't have money, or some suggest, even if he wishes to, he can pay back with the idias to the Nizak and the Beninis to the Balchov. And finally, Uksubas Isha, a woman is allowed to collect her kusuba only from Ziburis. If, of course, if the husband wants to give her better, he's allowed to. But if there's a fight, Nebuch, so then the woman is entitled to collect only from the worst properties and not from the middle and certainly not from the best properties. And all of this, as Rashi will tell us, based upon the Mishnah at the end, Tikkun Olam, Akulu Koy, it goes on everything over here. So the reason why this was set up was all for Tikkun Olam. So people should be very careful not to damage somebody else. So they're going to be punished by having to pay for the Idis. And in order to facilitate that loans should occur, it shouldn't be too advantageous to the borrower or to the lender, so they collect from the Beninis. And the woman, in order to make sure that husbands are anxious to go get married, they'll know that if they do have to pay off the Ksuba, they can pay it off with their most inferior properties. So this will be good for the women as well, that the husbands will be more willing to go and marry them. So therefore, all of these, Mipnei Tikkun HaOlam. Now, Tanakama says the Ksubas Isha is only collected from Ziburis. Rebbeir disagrees. Rebbeir Omer, no. Af Ksubas Isha Bebenis. He says, no, the woman will still be sought after by the men, even if the men know that they'll have to pay the Ksuba back with Beninis and not Ziburis, and therefore that won't hurt the women's chances of getting married. And therefore, Rebbeir holds that even the Ksubas Isha can be connected from the middle-level properties of Beninis and not from only the inferior properties. Now, this is Mipnei Tikkun HaOlam, as I just explained. The Mishnah continues and says, likewise, Ein Nifra'im Min Nechasim Mishubadim, Bevokum Sheyesh Nechasim B'nei Chorin. There is a rule that a Baal Chov is allowed to go collect his debt. Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, so when Shimon goes to collect, if Reuven doesn't have money right now, and he doesn't have properties right now, but there were properties that Reuven had originally, which Shimon was counting on to be the collateral, so even if Reuven sells them after the loan, nevertheless, they're mishubad, they are leaned to the loan. So therefore, if on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Shimon lent Reuven the money, and Reuven had one property, and then the loan is due Rosh Chodesh Nisan the next year, and meanwhile, on Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, he had sold that one property that he had to a Levi, so then, now, when Shimon comes to collect the loan, a year later on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and Reuven doesn't have any money, and he doesn't have any properties, so that property that he sold on the previous Rosh Chodesh Tammuz to Levi is Meshubad to the loan of Shimon, and Shimon has the right to go to Levi, take that property, and new Levi then will have to go and litigate with Reuven to get back the money that he paid for that property. So this is called collecting from Nechasim Meshubadim. But let's say Reuven had two properties, and he had one property that he sold to Levi, but he had another property that's still extant. So in this situation, when Reuven has properties, so Shimon doesn't have the right to say, hey, I'd rather have the property that Levi got, so I'll go collect from Levi. No, he can't do that. If Reuven has properties to pay off the loan, so he has to collect them from the B'nai Chorin that Reuven has and not from the Meshubit property that Levi got. And this is true, Vafilu Hein Ziburis. Even though he's entitled to collect, Shimon can collect as a Balchov from the Beninis, and Reuven had sold the Beninis to Levi, and he kept the Ziburis for himself. Nevertheless, in this situation, Shimon would only be entitled to get the Ziburis that Reuven has as B'nai Chorin and not to go to the lien property, the Nechasim Mishubadim, that he had sold to Levi on Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. That's the second part of the Mishnah. Next part of the Mishnah tells us, Ein Nifra'im Minichsa Yisomim Elamin Ziburis, that you're not allowed to go collect from Yisomim except from the Ziburis. Even though you're a Bachov, you can normally collect from Beninis. Even though you're a Nizak and you're allowed to collect from the Idias, if the orphan's inherited land would be Meshubad to the either the loans or the damages that their father had owed. So the rabbis made a takana in order that the orphans should be able to do better. As it is, Nebuch, their orphans are going to be in a sad situation. So therefore, Mivnei Tikkun HaOlam, so you're not allowed to collect from the Yisomim except from the Ziburis. So if they have different levels of property that they inherited from the father, Ziburis, Beninis, and Idias. So normally, the Bachov could collect from those Beninis properties, and the Nizak could collect from the Idias properties. So in this situation, we only allow them to pay off from the Ziburis. They're entitled to pay off only from the Ziburis if that's best for them. Next part of the Mishnah says, Ein motziin la'achilas peros, v'lishevach karkos. Here we're talking about if a person bought a field. He didn't realize he was buying it from a ganav. So you have Reuven that has his field stolen by Shimon. Shimon goes and then sells that field, which he stole, and he sells it to Levi. All of a sudden, comes about, Levi finds out that this field isn't his. So Reuven wants to take back the field, which of course he's entitled to. So Levi then says, hey, I put in money for the field. I was harvesting these fields. I haven't yet harvested them. I put in all this effort. So he's not allowed to go collect. Ein mosiim l'achilas peros v'l'shevach karkos. He's not allowed to go and collect from nechosim mishubadim. So let's say were leaned properties that theoretically Levi could collect from Shimon, but Shimon had sold his real properties that he owned to somebody else, so theoretically they're leaned for this sale that Levi had purchased from him, because after all, Shimon didn't really sell him the fields, so he should be entitled to get back his money from leaned properties that Shimon had. So the din is that we don't allow Levi in this situation to go and collect from those leaned properties that Shimon had sold. L'achilas peros, for any fruits that he now should have been entitled to, but Levi couldn't eat because they went back to Reuven. Or l'shevach hakos, he put in effort and money into the field to spruce it up, to make it more usable, better. So he's not entitled to get that back from lean properties. He's allowed to get it from the nechosim that are present, from nechosim b'nei chorin that Shimon has, but he can't go and collect it from nechosim mishubadim. Furthermore, the Mishnah tells us, likewise, ulamazon ha'ishav abanos, a woman is entitled to be supported from the estate of her husband. And her children are entitled to be supported from that estate in certain situations. The girls are entitled to mazonos up to the age that they get married, or until the age that they are no longer a nara, when they become a bogeris, so they're no longer entitled to mazonos. But until then, the woman and the daughters are entitled to mazonos. So in this case as well, they can only collect from nechassim that are b'nei chorin from the father, and not from nechassim that are mishubadim. Why? Why can they only collect in all of these situations? Achilas peros, l'sheva hakos, l'bazon isha v'abanos, they can only collect from, they cannot collect, ein mosim min chasim mishubadim, they can only connect from b'nei chorin, again, mipnei tekuna olam, which Rashi says not only goes on this, but goes on everything previously in the Mishnah. And that's because it would be very difficult for anybody to ever buy something and say, hey, listen, I don't know what's going to happen to you. You're going to have to pay alimony. You're going to have to pay for mazonos. You're going to have to maybe have other things going on. No, it's going to destroy sale of property. People, there's no way to figure this out. So therefore, if they take it all, they said, no, you can't collect from the chasim mishubad. And finally, the Mishnah concludes and says, "Va'motzi metzia." The person finds an aver. He finds a wallet, right? Reuven finds Shimon's wallet, and he says, "Shimon, I found your wallet. Here's your wallet, and there's $100 inside, and I'm returning it to you." And Shimon says, "Hey, there were $200 in my wallet." So this is a classical case of modus mixtas. Shimon says there were $200 in the wallet. Shimon says, no, there's only $100 in the wallet. I admit there's $100 here. I'm not admitting to the other $100. It wasn't there. So technically, this should be a chiyuv of a modus mixtas shvur. So the Mishnah tells us, lo yishava mipnei tikkun olam. If Reuven is going to know that maybe he's going to have to swear if he returns his wallet, because he doesn't know that Shimon's going to be either lying, or Shimon's going to really say that what $200 are there and somebody else took $100 from it. And now Reuven is honest. He says it really was only $100, and he's going to have to make a shvur. People don't like to make shvur. So he says, you know what? The wallet over here. I'm not touching it. And therefore, it may take it all of them in order to encourage people to go return stuff, so they know that they will not have to make a shmur no matter what. So therefore, they'll be encouraged to return stuff. Therefore, it may take it all of them. The Chacham said, "Lo yishava." Okay, a lot of stuff in the Mishnah. Let's start the Gemara. We said, "It may take an olam." We said that the nizak has to go and be compensated. The person who was damaged can be compensated from the idiots from the best properties. Gemara says, you're telling me this is tikkun olam, this is din derabanan? The raisi, this is beferish pasuk, the chsiv, meitav sodeu, meitav kar mishalem. If you went and caused damage to somebody, it says in Parshas Mishpatim that and you're entitled to go collect meitav sodeu, that's idiots, or meitav kar mishalem. So what are you telling me this is tikkun olam? It's a din deraisa. So Abai says, no, this is needed for the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. As I alluded to before, the machlokes of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, we're now going to see now. Motzricha el Rabbi Shmuel. Yomar, the Rabbi Shmuel said, mi d'araisa b'dinizak shamina. Min ha-Torah, we go and look at the properties of the person who was damaged, the nizak, and we say, what is his level of property? So let's say he has properties that are grade A, B, and C. So his grade A is the worst, grade B is the second best, that's bainus, and for him, grade C is idios. However, there's really a grade D, E, and F that are even better. The properties that he had that he calls his idios are really somebody else's inferior properties. So, mid daraisa b'dinizak shaminam. Rabbi Shmuel says that on a daraisa level, you look at the properties of the nizak and you collect from them on his properties, not the Mazik's properties. So therefore, the Mishnah is telling us, Kamashmalan, Mipnei Tikkun Olam, the rabbis came along and change the din daraisa to make it even better because of tikkun olam, the shaminam bid the mazik. We look at the mazik's properties. So the mazik actually has grade D, E, and F, which are even a higher level than the A, B, and C that the nizak had. And therefore, he'll have to pay from his F, which is the highest quality, and not pay from the C's that he may have, which are the nizak's highest qualities. So shaminam bid the mazik. And where do we see this? Where's this machlokes? Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, my Rabbi Shmuel, the Tanya. We learn the following braisa. If a person damages another person, this animal, actually, it's talking about in the pasuk, his animal ate or he stepped on the crops of somebody else. So Reuven's animal destroyed Shimon's crops. Reuven is the mazik. His animal is really the mazik, but he's considered the mazik, and Shimon is considered the nizak. So the pasuk says that Shimon can collect from Meitav Sodeo Meitav Karim Shalim. So Rishmol says, Meitav Sodeo Shal Nizak, Meitav Karim Shal Nizak, Diri Rishmol. Rishmol says, you look at it from the point of view of the Nizak. So in this situation, let's again have is the grade A is the lowest, grade F is the highest. So the Nizak only has A, B, and C. So for him, it would be level C. But the Mazik has, let's say, C, D, E, and F. So he only has to give him from his level of C, not his level of F, because he's only giving the Nizak what the Nizak's best is, which is his inmost inferior. His level C is his worst type, but it's the Nizak's best, so he can give him level C. He doesn't have to give him level F. That's the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Kiva Omer, lo ba'a kosev el legabos l'nizokim min ha'idias, that is coming to teach us over here that the person who is paying the nizak has to pay from the mazik's best. Kal v'chomer l'hekdish. And this is a kal v'chomer from hekdish, which we'll discuss in tomorrow's shiur. So Rabbi Akiva clearly says you collect from the mazik and not from the nizak, whereas Rabbi Shmuel says you collect from the nizak. And again, we'll explain this kal v'chomer in tomorrow's shiur, so we'll leave it till then. Now, Gemara says, Ulu Rabbi Shmuel, it doesn't make any sense. You're telling me you collect from the nizak. So, Ochal Shmeina, Mishalim Shmeina. You're telling me that you go look at the nizak's best property. So let's say the nizak has A, B, and C. So we understand that if Reuven's cow ate the property of Shimon, so if he ate from the C category, the best field, Ochal Shmeina, so Mishalim Shmeina, we understand that. But Ochal Kihusha, if he ate from the A quality, why should he pay Mishalim Shmeina? Does that make any sense? He damaged A property. Why would he have to go and pay C property prices? So Gemara says, Amar Bidi Barab, and he explains as follows. Hach Ma'eskin, you know what we're talking about? Kegon She'ochla Aruga Ben Arugos. Bidi Barab says, you know what happened over here? That he actually ate a area that we don't know. It was in between the A and the C. We don't know. Was it A or was it C that he actually ate? So, Ikechush Ochal Ishmenocha. We don't know. V'lo Yadina. Ikechush Ochal Ishmenocha. We don't know which one he ate. So, therefore, in this suffix situation, the Mishalim Lemeitav, he has to assume it was C that he ate and not A. That's what the Chiddush is over here, according to Rivi Ravin. Rava doesn't like this. Rava says, really? Il Yadinon Dechush Ochal. If we know for a fact that he ate the A, the worst type of fruits, Mishalim Khusha, then we'd have to pay the Khusha. So now, Hashtu the Lyudina, now we don't know whether it was A or C. Mishalim Shmeina, you have to say you pay C. That goes against the normal rules of Amotzi Mechaber, all of Araya. Normally, the person who is Mukhsak, he's the one that doesn't have to prove it. It's the one who's trying to extract the money would have to prove it. So in this situation, the Nizak is trying to extract the money from the Mazik. So if the Nizak says, you have to pay me C, he should have to prove that it was C. If you don't know it was A or C, so then the default should be that he should only have to pay me. So Rabbi says, Rabidi, but Rabbi, I disagree with you. Ella, how do you understand this then? Ella, Omar, Rav Acha, Yaakov, we turn to Mem Tes, Omar Aleph. Hach Ma'eskin, you know, we're dealing with what we said before. Kegon Shaisa Idias the Nizak is Hebrews the Mazik. That the best properties of the Nizak, he has A, B, and C. So C is his best property, is Kiziburis the Mazik, is only as good as the worst properties of the Mazik. So the Mazik has, let's say, C, D, E, and F. So the C, which is the worst of the Mazik, happens to be the best of the Nizak. So in this situation, Rishmol Savar, Bid the Nizak Shemino, we look at the Nizak, and he only has to pay him the C level property. Whereas Rabbi Kiva Savar, Bid the Mazik Shemino, no, we look at the Mazik. And we'd have to pay him the F properties, and that's the machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. We'll continue discussing this a lot more tomorrow, but with this, we'll conclude today's share.